Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere. Like when your fantasy league meets up at your house. Everything's great until the hot plate gets too hot for the tablecloth. Now your kitchen's up in smoke. And if you don't have the right home insurance coverage, the cost to fix this is anything but a fantasy. So switch to Allstate, save money, and get protected from mayhem like this. Not available in every state. Based on coverage selected, subject to terms, conditions, and availability. Savings vary.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of the Spanish Football Podcast. I'm Phil Kitch from Aludes. Sid Lowe is with me, as ever. Hello, Sydney.
Hello, how are you?
I'm okay. We're enjoying an unseasonably warm spell, aren't we? It's 31 degrees and we're in October and it's very, very warm in Madrid. So I'm a bit hot and flustered, but otherwise I'm okay.
Yeah, me too.
Yes.
Very similar.
Yes, yes. If you could see us, we're on a Zoom call. We both have rather hot and flustered faces on because it's been a busy Monday in the heat. Let's get to what happened on match day 8 in La Liga EA Sports. There's actually loads for us to talk about this week. We want to cram in as much as possible into half an hour or so. So we won't go into like massive detail because we want to talk about 4 or 5, maybe 6 even different games. But if there is something else you want us to talk about, send us a message and we'll answer it on the Q&A podcast. More on that in just a second. This is what happened then on match day 8. On Friday night, the La Liga script writers were at their very best because Sergio Ramos scored an own goal for Sevilla away to Barcelona. It was the only goal of the game. Barcelona continued to be the only unbeaten side in the division. Barca won, Sevilla nil. And then on Saturday, Getafe and Villarreal played out a goalless draw. Villarreal playing for nearly 75 minutes with a man down after Alex Baena got himself sent off. He's actually he's quite a dirty player, Sid. I mean, he's a really good player, but last season he got 1 red and 11 yellow cards. This season he's leading the charts already with 1 red and 3 yellow cards. Jorgensen made a number of really good saves for Villarreal, keeping Getafe at bay, and they managed to get a point, the Yellow Submarine. It also finished level at Vallecas. You and I were both at the Estadio de Vallecas to see Rayo Vallecano and Mallorca play out a 2-2 draw. Absolute madness. Madness at the end. there was a VAR decision. There was a penalty given. It was missed. It was retaken. And it was scored, which meant that Rayo snatched a point from the jaws of defeat. The guy on the tannoy at the end said, "Hope you guys didn't have a heart attack." Because it was kind of like that game. Then Real Madrid beat Girona by 3-0 at the Estadio Montilivi. Of course, Girona, we were waxing lyrical about them last week because they were top of the table. They're not anymore. And they suffered that first defeat of the season at the hands of Real Madrid. It was also 3-0 to Real Sociedad in the Basque Derby against Athletic Club. They were better than Athletic. Maybe the scoreline flattered them a little bit, but some nicely taken goals. And a really quite brilliant celebration from Take Kubo. More on that in a minute. Game of the weekend and possibly game of the season was at the Power Horse Stadium. Hashtag unexpected partidazo. Almeria 3, Granada 3. Almeria were 3-0 up at half-time thanks to a 5-minute Luis Suarez hat-trick, all assisted by the same player, Largi Ramazani. Then Granada came back. They scored 3 in the last 25 minutes. They missed a penalty and they hit the post in the 101st minute. It all happened at the Power Horse Stadium, but they remained the bottom two sides in the division. Osasuna beating Alaves by 2-0. Atletico Madrid coming from 2-0 down to beat Cadiz 3-2 at home, thanks to 2 from Angelito Correa. And Real Betis beat Valencia by 3-0. Asana Diao, you heard of him? You might not have. It was only his second appearance for Real Betis. He scored on his first in midweek away to Granada, and he scored again against Valencia. So 2 appearances for the teenager and 2 as they beat an understrength Valencia side 3-0. Now, if you're enjoying the Monday podcast and our midweek re-releases of TSFP Presents Classic Teams, why not join us over at patreon.com/TSFP. Patrons get a Q&A pod and a bonus pod every single week and a brand new episode of TSFP Presents and Rincón Cultural every month. There's Al's paper review, access to the TSFP Discord. Join us. It's around €4 a month. Okay, I've done enough talking. Now, you talk for the next 25 minutes, Sid. Let's start. that's literally no problem. We can start with the Basque derby. Real Sociedad beating Athletic 3-0. We can talk about the football, but we can also talk about that image of the Athletic Club fan. His name is John.
Yeah.
Among the celebrating Real Sociedad fans. If you haven't seen it, go and look it up. It's really quite fantastic. He's surrounded by Real Sociedad fans, all doing the Poznan. He's in there, in amongst them, with his Athletic Club shirt on, and he's just smiling. Is there a better advert for this game and for La Liga than this image? It really is quite nice to see after so much negative publicity for La Liga. This image is really quite heartwarming.
Yeah, it was proper good, wasn't it? It was really good. And I was kind of toying with it a little bit today, thinking, is this the thing that you focus an entire derby kind of wrap around, the entire piece around? I love that idea of Real Sociedad have just scored and their fans turn their back. And the one fan who doesn't turn his back, because it's not just that it's a guy in blue and white surrounded by people in red and white. Sorry, wrong way around. A guy in red and white surrounded by people in blue and white. It's that everyone else is facing the other way. It's like, it's like one person going, nope, I'm not doing it your way. But there's no bitterness, there's no anger, there's no nothing. And they're jumping around either side, doing the Poznan, as you say, facing the other way. He's looking, and at one point, and he's just kind of thinking, this is quite funny. At one point, the camera catches him. And he realises this, and he sort of smiles at the camera. And he actually has done a series of interviews over the last couple of days. And in one of them, I assume he said this in all of them, but in the one that I heard, he said, you know, the cameraman was looking at me and laughing. And so I kind of couldn't help laughing as well, because here I am surrounded by all these. He'd gone with the season ticket of a Real Sociedad supporting friend. And it was just a really nice image. There's a couple of others that are similar, because obviously all around the ground there were handfuls of Athletic fans knocking around. But that kind of image and the footage and everyone bouncing around and him clearly thinking, do you know what? It is fun because you can lose, but it doesn't mean you have to hate it. It doesn't mean it has to be awful, and it was really nice. I've seen a little bit. Actually, a friend of mine who's an Oviedo fan was kind of saying today, I don't want it to be like this. I want to hate Sporting. I want it to be a fight. I want it to be angry. But actually, it's good like this, because as you've said before, and I think this is the key point, this isn't done in lieu of a proper derby. It's not like saying, oh, well, it doesn't matter. Derby's rubbish, but everyone's lovely. No, because the derby itself is thunderous. Mm. The derby itself is edgy and occasionally nasty, and they really lay into each other, and they're pretty good teams as well. But at the moment, obviously, they went into this with Athletic in a Champions League place, and this put Real Sociedad into a Champions League place, admittedly then taken off them by Atletico Madrid on Sunday night. But you're talking about two really good teams as well. And it was, yeah, it was nice, very nice.
Al's put here in the production notes a very pertinent question, which I feel needs asking. Is Take Kubo the most fun player to watch in La Liga at the moment? I think he's up there, isn't he?
I think he's the best after Bellingham, with the possible exception this season of maybe Griezmann, although he hasn't quite found his full form yet. And I've liked Gavi as well, actually. I must admit, I've really liked Gavi so far this season. But you're right, fun, yeah. He's fun to listen to. He's fun to watch. There's something about him. There's that lovely word in Spanish. I don't really know what the best English description of it is, or translation. He's a Salau. He's Salau. He's kind of cheeky and amusing, and he's got no inhibitions, and he tells you the truth, and he plays like that as well. He goes at people. He makes things happen. He makes football good. And he's I've been writing about him today, and I just think he's a complete joy. And actually, one of the things I think that's sort of missed in the fun is that actually it's not always been that easy for him. So, of course, he got kicked out of the Barcelona Academy because Barcelona had broken the rules. He has to go back to Japan. When he comes back to Spain at 18, at which point, of course, he's legally allowed to, he has to go to Real Madrid. I say he has to go to Real Madrid. It's not a bad place to go. But obviously, everything that had been set up didn't happen. Real Madrid send him out on loan. Three different clubs, four different loan periods. The first one, he goes down with Mallorca. He then goes to Villarreal. And I remember us talking about this on the podcast. At Villarreal, there was this debate about whether he should play more and why it was desperately unfair that he wasn't getting opportunities and Unai Emery was out of order. But it was a debate entirely falsely created from within Madrid, from a load of people who weren't bothering to watch Villarreal. They just thought, oh, they've got a Real Madrid player. Why aren't they playing him? As if Villarreal were letting everyone down. And actually, if you looked at what Villarreal did that year and you looked at his performances, really and truly, I didn't think it was possible to argue very much. Although, of course, in Spain, it's always possible to argue. Then he goes, of course, to Getafe halfway through that season. And it's really the wrong club for him. And he actually played, I thought, really quite well in his second spell at Mallorca. But of course, it's Mallorca. And Real Sociedad has been so good for him. The right kind of club, the right style, the right environment, the right people around him. And I was really struck by something that that I listened to today and I hadn't heard before. And it's him talking about going to Real Sociedad and describing it as the last train. He goes to Real Sociedad age 21 and he's already referring to it as the last train. Well, to continue the cliche, he's certainly got on board.
We had an interview with him on La Liga TV on the show that I present on a Thursday a couple of weeks ago. And he said, it was quite striking. One of the first things he said was along those lines. I'm not sure how we can translate this, but he said coming here was a chance to reivindicarme.
To prove a point, to demonstrate that I could be good enough. Vindication.
Yeah. Well, he's doing that. Five league goals and the celebration of the season so far, Sid.
Yeah, so he went and twerked.
He pulled his hamstring first.
Yeah, so he sort of does this little thing, reaches to his hamstring, and then he sticks his arse out. And it was like stupid sexy Flanders, wasn't it, in The Simpsons, where Ned Flanders is wearing that ski costume and he's waggling his bum. I'm childish, as our listeners know, but I quite liked the comment after the game where he said that Elustondo had put him up to it. And Elustondo had said, "Let's see if you've got the balls to do it." And I couldn't help but think, it's the bum you need, not the balls, to be able to do that. But you know, the point about this was that he let's go back to that word I used before, he's a salao. He likes doing it. There's a funness to him. There's a willingness to say, you know what, let's talk and let's be expressive and let's play this way and let's have fun, because actually, why not? What's wrong with doing that? He also said something in an interview I was listening to, really interesting. Apparently he claimed, well, I say apparently, he absolutely did claim it. Apparently he feels this, which I thought was very interesting, that he's much more reserved in Japanese. There's something about him speaking Spanish that I don't know if it kind of, he enjoys it, or maybe he doesn't feel the need to kind of take care of the linguistic nuances. He's prepared to basically be a bit potty mouthed, a bit in your face, a little bit leery, and just really enjoyable to listen to and to watch.
I mean, he spent a large chunk of his life here. So
he came at the age of 10. He was sent back at 15. He came again at 18. So absolutely.
Let's move on and discuss Real Madrid's 3-0 victory at Girona. Jude Bellingham scoring again and providing a magical assist for the first goal.
Yeah.
It was, if you haven't seen it, go and check it out. He's obviously been training with Luka Modric, because it was a fantastic ball with the outside of the boot, but there wasn't really a pass on. I don't know how he saw it, but he saw it and he provided it for Joselu, who scored again. And Real Madrid with a 3-0 victory. Girona had their chances in this game. They competed.
They
had more possession than Real Madrid. They won more aerial duels. They hit the woodwork as well. They forced Kepa into some good saves. They competed, but Real Madrid were effective.
Real Madrid were very effective. And not just that, but Real Madrid, I think, again, have demonstrated... We know this about Real Madrid, and it's maybe a little bit redundant to say it. They've got so many good quality players that even if they don't play particularly well, when the chances drop, they will mostly be taken. Although Bellingham had one where he was clean through and he hits the goalkeeper. And actually, I think he was not very pleased about that, because he mentioned after the game... I can't remember the exact phrase, and it's infuriating because, of course, you get it dubbed in Spanish and you're straining to try and hear what he's saying in English, the other side of the dubbing. And he said something like, the finish wasn't a very good finish. He said, and I'd missed chances before, but he does eventually get his goal. And as you say, the assist. And in that interview, he also says, he's asked about the assist. And he said, well, I've been watching Luka Modric every day for the last few months. And yeah, absolutely. And I thought, by the way, in terms of performance, this might be his best game for him.
Yeah, absolutely. He was, well, it, perhaps no... no coincidence that it came after he was rested in midweek, didn't play at all against Las Palmas, came back fully fresh and raring to go.
He was also asked, wasn't he, in the first half, I can't think which minute it is, but by this point, Girona have already had those two very early, really good chances, very, very early. And he was, I think Bellingham, if you sort of watch it, I suspect he was asked, I mean, it's not always that clear, but he started going across the left a lot more. And I think that was designed actually to protect Real Madrid as much as to help them attack, you know, to protect Real Madrid from the attacks going up their right wing. And so he played from a slightly different starting point than in other games.
like I said, if there's any other questions you want us to answer about Girona or Real Madrid, send them to us and we will talk about them on tomorrow's Q&A. Barcelona beating Sevilla by a goal to nil. I said that the script writers got their job absolutely spot on because Sergio Ramos scored an own goal. He'd actually been playing quite well, and I was speaking to someone who was pitch side at Montjuic, and they said it was really striking seeing him constantly talking, leading this defence, telling people where to go, where they needed to be, what they needed to do. And I guess that's why they brought him back. I mean, obviously he's Sergio Ramos, but they needed someone in that defensive line to lead them.
I'm going to slightly matty-thigh your phrase. What do you call that in English? Nuance it. Which is nuance to say, it. That's why
caveat.
Yeah, caveat it, I suppose. Yeah, there we go. That actually, that's probably the reason why I use caveat, because Matiz works so well in Spanish for so many things. I would caveat your phrase by saying it's why they should have brought him back, and it's why it was useful that they brought him back. I'm not sure it's actually why they did, if you see what I mean.
Right.
I think in purely footballing terms, there was actually a little bit of reluctance, and perhaps there shouldn't have been, and this is part of it. I do think there is a slight risk with him that he maybe doesn't have the speed, and that leads to a defensive line that plays a little deeper. But there's no doubt that the personality is there. And, you know, that's a big part of why Ramos has been such a great player. Now, occasionally, there's a sort of pantomime element to his leadership, and occasionally it's a little bit overplayed. But fundamentally, this is a guy who's been a truly, truly historic great player for Real Madrid and the Spanish national team. And there are reasons for that, and the personality is a big, big, big part of it.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Lamine Yamal was also very important for Barcelona in this game. Another big performance from the 16-year-old who had his contract extended today. Another 3 years. I think they can only do 3 years because he's 16 at the moment. So when you're that young, you can only have your contract extended by 3 years. But he's got a €1 billion buyout clause, I think. And obviously, Barcelona want to keep him tied down for as long as possible because he is showing that he is really quite special.
Yeah. And there's not really very much I can add to that except just to say, yes, he really is. He goes at people, he's willing, he's repetitive as well. So he'll lose the ball and he'll try again. But he doesn't actually lose the ball that often because I think his decision-making is really, really good. I think he understands the game as well as being very good at playing it. You know, let's go through the normal lines, calm down, everybody cool out a little bit. Boy, yeah, he's very, very good indeed.
He is. And also, you know, this calm down business. Football is about sort of
exactly.
joy,
no,
isn't
no, absolutely.
It? And excitement.
It is.
So
yeah,
get excited about this unbelievably good young player because he's here to stay, hopefully, fingers crossed and injury permitting. There have been developments off the field with Barcelona in the Negreira case and with certain issues surrounding some of their palancas as well. We've got a lot to get through on this podcast, so I don't think we're going to go into that here, but we do have questions about that on the Q&A podcast,
good.
So
okay,
we will
cool.
go into it. We yeah. will go into it there because obviously it's important we touch upon that. Atletico Madrid 3, Cadiz 2. Now, I wanted to ask you, Sid, I was watching this game, and Angel Correa, I was struck by my feelings that I don't know if I'm getting going over the top here, and it's not like me to make wild, ridiculous statements, but here we go. Is he actually not far off being world class? And I think he's got everything, genuinely everything you'd want from a striker. He just doesn't fit into the first 11 at Atletico Madrid. But if you look at his finishing ability, his aggression, his movement, his commitment, his work rate, he is really, really high in every sort of metric that you'd want from a forward. He just never seems to get a place in the starting 11. He seems to be okay with that. And I don't know, I just wondered where you thought he sort of stood in terms of being an elite forward who never really starts matches.
Yeah. Well, I suppose part of the answer is the fact that he never starts matches has to pose questions to you. because managers are not idiots, and if someone is absolutely elite, he's going to end up playing and playing a lot. The other thing is what we have seen of Angel Correa over the years, which is that he can be both unbelievably brilliant and bafflingly bad, sometimes in the same move. We said this before about, I think we've used almost this exact line with Ousmane Dembélé at times, that he can frustrate you and make you think, oh, this guy's amazing at the same time. When he's looking good, he is wonderful. There is maybe a lack of continuity about him, but then, you know, that's partly down to Simeone and all sorts of things like that. He's had a handful of not very important, but sort of semi-important injuries. You're right, he seems to accept being a sub a lot. And every time Simeone talks about him, he talks about him with a real warmth, real fondness, which makes you think he can't be leaving him out because he doesn't like him. You know, this can't be a case of having a reluctance to play him. It is, I suspect, as you say, partly about the profile of him means it doesn't entirely fit. It doesn't always work. But then when he plays and it does work, he just looks like an extraordinary footballer and a very unusual one as well. I can't think of a player who plays quite like him. You look at him and I think he's a football Salah player, isn't he? And I don't know if I can think of a... Maybe... Do you know what? This is going to sound a bit silly, but in terms of the touch in the area and sort of using a toe poke to finish with and tight turning and stuff like that, Ben Yedder might be the closest thing I can think of to him.
Right. Okay.
But I think he's more dynamic and electric than Ben Yedder. Much more dynamic and electric than Ben Yedder.
Yes.
He's... I don't know how to define him. But yeah, on his day, he's brilliant.
Hmm. I was just looking at his stats here. It's 24 league goals over the last three seasons. Well, two and a bit seasons that we've played so far. He's made 76 league appearances, 24 goals. But he started 34 games. He's only made 34 starts over the last two seasons and this season. And the goal ratio is pretty impressive. I could maybe work it out per minute, but it's pretty impressive from Angel Correa. I just almost feel a bit sorry for him that there isn't a place for him in the starting 11.
So do I. And you know, he's before said that he wants to play all the time, but he does seem to accept it really quite well. So maybe he's not that worried about it. Maybe he's okay about it.
Saul continues his renaissance in the heart of midfield. He's got four assists now this season from Saul. We spoke about him last week. I think we spoke about him after the derby, and he continues to impress, and he continues to be the... Well, I mean, he wanted a midfielder, Simeone, in the summer. Didn't necessarily get anyone in the transfer market, but he got Saul back. So
yeah, El Fichaje es. Yes. He wanted a number five, though, so he didn't necessarily want a Saul-shaped midfielder.
Yes.
But I really hope he is back, because I do think that he's potentially a properly good footballer who hasn't really demonstrated. He said something interesting yesterday. There's a line... something like, no, I haven't been anywhere. Nothing's really changed. I've always just said you have to be patient and wait for your opportunity. And I don't mean to be kind of dismissive or a smart ass, but in part, I think that's been his problem, is that he hasn't waited for those opportunities, or that he's found himself frustrated by the lack of them.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. I was doing some maths, by the way, while
you were
doing that. Goal every 101 minutes in the league for Angel Correa, which is not bad at all, is it?
I'm writing this down. 101 minutes per goal. I'm making a note of this. Although I don't know do I trust you on this stat? I mean, it's better than trusting.
No. No. Trust me. Okay. I got it right. Yeah. So Atletico Madrid rounding off a really good week. They started it by winning the derby. Then they battled hard to beat Osasuna in Pamplona, and then they came from behind to beat Cadiz. We were both at Vallecas, Sydney, to see a crazy game. Rayo 2, Mallorca 2. Rayo taking the lead through Alvaro Garcia, really dominating the first half. And then out of absolutely nothing, El Pirata, Vedat Muriqi, bringing Mallorca level. Then they took the lead with an absolutely beautiful goal from Antonio Sanchez. Fantastic through ball from Sergi Darder. If you go back and watch it, you'll see that it's kind of set up by Muriqi, dropping deep, playing the pass to Darder and making space for Antonio Sanchez to run into. I was writing a bit about Muriqi today, which is why I went back and had a good look at that goal. And then Rayo got that equaliser, as we mentioned at the top of the programme, with the last kick of the game, basically. We can talk about the actual football match, Sid, and talk about some of the people involved, but I wanted to maybe use this as a kind of existential discussion on VAR. And people in the UK, I think, are sort of losing their minds this week over the decision in the Liverpool-Spurs game, which is pretty damn baffling. And you know what? I'm kind of coming across to your side now. You've been saying for a while now that you feel that VAR should be scrapped. You've been saying that.
But I'm realistic enough to know that it can't be.
No, it's not. It's almost certainly not going to. But like deep down, that's what you would get rid of it.
Yeah, I mean,
I think I'm coming across to that now. Like, and my feeling is, what are we gaining from this? And I think that's what your feeling is, right? It's football is supposed to be enjoyment, and we watch it because it's entertaining and it's enjoyment. And if we're watching VAR, does not add to the enjoyment. It doesn't. And if it also makes mistakes as well, then like it did in the Liverpool Spurs game, genuinely, what's the point? I don't think the cost benefit analysis, I don't think it's bringing enough to the table to keep it. That's my honest assessment.
I think at heart there's two things that make VAR problematic. And I think basically the two things are that it was predicated on two myths. And the two myths are that it was absolutely terrible football before, and we absolutely needed to fix it, and there were so many terrible decisions all the time, and it was ruining the game, which just wasn't true. Mm. And the other myth, it was predicated on the, it'll be perfect now. Now, of course, we shouldn't, as humans, have been stupid enough to believe it would be perfect.
There was another myth as well, that it was only going to be used for clear and obvious errors.
Well, I mean, that's you see, this is where I would lean to at the moment with VAR, I'm really sick enough to know that it's not going to go. I actually think it probably shouldn't go completely because I can see the value in it. The trouble is, I don't know how you define a really, really, really stripped down version of VAR, which is what I would want. A really stripped down version of VAR. And I don't really know how you define clear and obvious, because what's clear for one person isn't obvious for the next, and so on. And obviously when you have it, everyone always wants it. So if it's not clear and obvious, but someone goes, yeah, but there is a foul there, everyone's going to be saying, well, why isn't that intervening? Because fundamentally we can't agree about what it is. Now, the reason I say get rid of it, and I say this in a very minor way, because as I say, I accept that it's there, I know it's there, and there's a bit of me that thinks if we could get it right, I'd like it. I disagree, for example, with this response I always get from people. And I understand it, by the way. And up to a point, I actually do agree with it, even though I'm now saying I disagree with it, which is, it's not the VAR that's the problem, it's the people doing it. Well, yes, of course, that's true of any machine, of any automated system, of anything in life. The problem is, of course, the existence of VAR conditions that, including the people making the decision. And it comes to your point, and this has been my point for a long time as well, which is that people say, but what about this decision? And what about that time when so-and-so, Thierry Henry gets the handball? Or what about the time when it was a clear penalty? Or what about, well, I tell you what, there's a bit of me, and I'm overplaying this a little bit for the sake of the argument, and I must admit, I'm uneasy because I don't know for sure what the solution is. But there's a bit of me that thinks, well, what about it? Maradona punched the ball into the goal in 86 against England. It was brilliant. That World Cup was brilliant, and shit happens, and it's unfair, and it's desperately unfair at the time, and everyone gets angry and understand it. But I think what VAR does is it creates this myth of perfection, which means that mistakes are far harder to take, people become far more conspiratorial, and the fundamental thing for me is, and pardon the language, I don't give a shit about the decisions. I give a shit about the game, and it's the game that gets damaged more than the decisions, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, well, you're in the wrong country for that, because the decisions very much get talked about much more than the
game. And I understand that, by the way, because, of course, and we do it as well because we are journalists. When you go back and you talk about a game, you do sort of strip it down to the moments that you think define it. And those, of course, by definition, are the moments that decide it too. So the penalty that wasn't, or the penalty that wasn't got scored, or that foul that came before the goal. Of course you go back to it. And this is why I say that, you know, we try not to talk about, I say let's not talk about referees, not because we shouldn't talk about them, because they're absolutely an element of this and we should talk about them. But in a way, we don't see the wood for the trees, if you see what I mean.
Hmm. Yeah. It's also really rubbish if you're a fan in the stadium. Like, genuinely affects your enjoyment of the game, which is, I don't know. Anyway, I just thought we should have a little conversation about that.
Just very briefly on that game, those last 12 minutes were absolutely absurd. And the referee totally lost the plot. And the best bit about, I mean, this is about the referee, not the VAR. So let's not blame VAR for this, but, it's part of the VAR conditioning things. There are two decisions that he waits to hear from the VAR for him. And both times gives the decision and then puts his hand up and goes, actually, wait.
The first goal that Mallorca scored, it was a goal and then it was ruled out for offside. And then he gave it. And then he said, hold on a second. And then there's a couple of seconds, and they said, no, actually, yeah, no, yeah, it was
and
bizarre.
He did it with a penalty as well. He pointed to the spot and then went, actually, stop. Which, by the way, translated to the Spurs-Liverpool thing, because obviously one of the arguments they've said is that the communication was bad and they knew they'd got it wrong, but the game had sort of restarted. There's a bit that thinks that I don't really see a reason why I can't go, actually, stop, if the game's literally only just restarted. But anyway, there you go. It was all very silly.
It was all very silly. It was all very dramatic as well.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, we could argue that VAR made it more fun in this particular occasion. But I'm not sure if it does, because there's just a total desconcierto. What do you call that in English? Desconcierto. Like, just completely disconcerted. You have no idea what's happening.
Mess, yeah. I mean, it was a bit of a mess. Anyway, before we go, here's a quick word about what happened in the Segunda División. Leganés, atop of the table. Super Pepino will be delighted after their 2-1 win against Racing Santander on Friday. Zaragoza a second after they were beaten 1-0 at home by Mirandés. Levante, Tenerife, Espanyol and Sporting are in the playoffs. And Oviedo are no longer bottom after they won 3-1 at Eldense.
Three goals, Phil.
It's probably not going to happen again for a while. So
no, but it's also probably not entirely chance. I mean, far be it for me to point the finger at our previous manager, but this wasn't likely with him in charge.
No, I think that's fair to say. This week, we do have Spanish sides in European action on Tuesday. We've got PSV Eindhoven against Sevilla, Napoli against Real Madrid, and Salzburg against Real Sociedad. Then on Wednesday, it's Atleti Feyenoord, Porto against Barca, and on Thursday, Betis, Sparta Prague, and Villarreal against Rennes in the Europa League. That's it. Thank you very much for listening. We'll be over at patreon.com/TSFP for the rest of the week if you need us. And if you don't, that's fine. Once a week is okay for you. It's all right for us. We'll be here next Monday as ever. Adios.
Cheerio.